Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase, Willie, and D-Mace here on a Wednesday at high noon. It's our time to say hello to Jonathan Hutton, Outkick 360. He joins us every Wednesday at noon. Hut, how we doing?
Gentlemen, week one is here. I'm doing great. How about you guys?
We're doing fantastic. It was good to see you the other night for the debut of the Eddie George Show, which I know you're excited to be a part of every Monday night at 6 o'clock from 6 in Peabody.
Love it. And Eddie is always entertaining. He's the Renaissance man. We could put topics into a hat and pull out a topic and go for an hour with Eddie on that. So, yeah, it reminds me of a couple years back we would host the Cigars, Cocktails, and Conversation, and he would bring people in for an off-the-record chat. And we're a cigar away from actually having that show live on 102.5. So I'm all for that, Chase, if you want to make that happen.
Well, you know what? We might be able to do that because Jonathan Hutton's segment is brought to you by Blend Bar with Davidoff Cigars. Visit Blend Bar, located in the heart of
downtown
Nashville.
That's usually the hard part, is get the sponsor. We got all this taken care of now.
I know. Visit Blend Bar, located in the heart of downtown Nashville.
All you need is a humidor.
Will you let me finish the read? Blend Bar with Davidoff Cigars, luxury redefined. All right, Hut, it's week one for the Titans as they take on the New York Giants. And, you know, I think everybody on paper looks at this and goes, all right, the Titans are probably the better team. But we've seen week ones, Vrabel's 2-2 in his career in week one. So what do you think that some of the points of emphasis for Vrabel and his coaching staff are to get this team ready for the game at Nissan Stadium on Sunday?
Well, there's good and the bad here. The good is the Giants are not the Cardinals, right? But the Cardinals were a good team last year whenever they came out of the gate swinging. They were the last remaining unbeaten team up until week 7 or week 8 when they played Green Bay. And they came in here and ran it up and down the field, run after catch, I should say, on the Titans' defense. The Giants are not that. But in what is a very unpredictable league, week one is on the extreme. Ken Whisenhunt looked like a genius coach in week one for the Tennessee Titans. I mean, he won in the 2 years in Tampa and Kansas City, and they looked like they were off to a good start, and then, you know, we would see everything fall. So I do think there are some week one wonders with some really bad teams because coaches scheme up something really well. That's really the only concern I would have personally. I realize they're going to have more concerns about personnel matchups, but the bag of tricks with a new head coach, Wink Martindale now calling plays, which means they're going to blitz the crap out of the Titans' offensive line, which is a lot for a veteran offensive line to handle, and let alone the rookie right tackle, along with some guys who are plug and play based on injuries this preseason or in for Saffold, who's now in Buffalo. I'm intrigued by that matchup on the week one stance, Chase, because of the unknowns of what we're going to see and the fact that Mike Kafka is going to be calling plays, who was with Kansas City. He's calling plays for Brian Daboll. So the intrigue will be what do the Giants look like and what does Daniel Jones look like in this new offense?
We have our poll question up at 102.5 The Game. The over-under for Derrick Henry rushing yards on the season is 1350. Would you take the over or the under?
I'm taking the over. I think there's for all of those that are pointing to Henry's demise, I think it's just as likely he leads the league in rushing again because of the way the team is built. And they're going to have to give him the football a lot early on. I don't think they plan to use him any less than what they did in the first 7 games last year prior to his injury. They need him. I mean, he is their bell cow. He is what churns everything offensively for them. And no matter the down and distance and no matter the score, they're going to give him the football. They were down 17 points a few years back in Carolina, and they were still backed up in their own end zone handing the football off to him. So I don't think they're going to say, man, we've got to watch the carries early on or the wear and tear is real. They've never treated him like that. And my anticipation is he goes over that simply because of how many carries he's going to get if he stays healthy.
Josh Gordon signs to the practice squad. He talked to the media earlier this week. Vrabel's been asked about him quite a bit. And as things go along, I've kind of gone from, I don't think he debuts in week one, to I think he's in the lineup on Sunday. What say you?
I could see that. I mean, they're not deep at the position. I haven't laid eyes on Josh Gordon like some other media members who have been out at practice or have talked to him in the locker room. I've only heard what he says. He's gifted. You know, he's over 30, but he's gifted. And there are some ways to use him as a fifth wideout where I wouldn't mind having him on the field for a couple of plays if you can get him the football. You know, he signed here over, he had a chance to go back to Kansas City and came here for the opportunity. I think he knows he can get on the field quickly. I thought the same thing though at the end of last year, Chase, with Golden Tate. We never saw him. So it is all based on practice, which they're doing today. And what happens today and tomorrow with Josh Gordon will determine whether or not he's going to be activated by Saturday afternoon to get ready for Sunday's kickoff. I'll be intrigued if they do it though, because I personally, if they go Hollister on game day and they keep Gordon on the practice squad, the Hollister's there to block, and they're going to harp on wide receivers blocking. I mean, I don't know if Josh Gordon's that guy. Josh Gordon's a playmaker, so that may be the only reason why they don't use him on Sunday.
Derek loves that discussion, right? Get the guys in there who can block.
That's
why you signed a receiver.
Give me a solid blocker over an elite wide receiver any day.
D-Mace, how much blocking do you do?
A blocking isn't want to. I blocked all the time, but they didn't pay me to block. They paid me to catch passes and touchdowns. That's what they did. I mean, blocking was a byproduct. You know, it was go out there and do your job. That's a part of blocking. We're talking with Jonathan Hutton.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Absolutely. We're talking to Jonathan Hutton. You can catch him on Outkick 360. Jonathan, now we had a discussion earlier about the Titans and more importantly, Ryan Tannehill, and how he could potentially operate in an offense that was a little bit more pass happy. But you brought up something that I did want to ask you about, because Wink Martindale is known for his blitzes. I mean, even I think it was 2019, even when he had his secondary almost decimated, the man blitzed and blitzed and blitzed until he couldn't no more. And they were successful at times. Do the Titans, if they choose to employ that type of strategy, which I think they will do the Titans have enough playmakers to overcome that?
I mean, going into week one, they are not as good at wide receiver and the playmaking department, hands down. I mean, hands down, last year to this year, in week one is vastly different. Robert Woods, his bread and butter in L.A., and tell me if I'm wrong, D-Mace, mm-hmm. He is great. He's a great route runner, mm-hmm. run after catch, quick slants, get him the football quick and let him get some yards after the catch, move the sticks. They don't have anybody, I don't think, that's going to take the top off this defense on Sunday. And let me put it a different way. I don't think the secondary of New York fears this receiving core or any one guy. That there's a difference there compared to last year. You know, AJ commanded some respect because he was going to bring it week in, week out. Robert Woods does that. I'm a huge fan of what he's done throughout his career. He's coming off the injury, and Treylon Burks, while, you know, I think we'll see him, I don't know how much, Nick Westbrook-Akina, he's a role player, and that's totally fine, but, you know, an example would be, they asked Anthony Firkser, who's a role player, to be a number one tight end, and he remained a role player, not a number one tight end. I don't need Nick Westbrook-Akina being the number two receiver in this offense. To me, it comes down to Hooper and what they've done at tight end. And if they've upgraded there, and they're going to go, I think they go heavy two tight end personnel, 12 personnel, because of Martindale's defense and because of their worry about the right side of this line, they're going to go heavy run and play action, where Tannehill is very good. He's very good on play action, especially on second down and over the middle routes. Robert Woods and Hooper, I would point to as the two playmakers against this style of defense, because that's where Tannehill is going to make his money Sunday.
Now, Hutton, with that being said, and that was a great answer, but with that being said, is Vrabel and Downing trying to make guys be more than they are? Because I understand the trade for, you know, trading AJ away, bringing in Burks, right, going to get Woods. But it just still seems like, to me, they're asking guys to do more than they're capable of doing.
That might be the case. You know, they've also had guys who have stepped up and been key role players. I mean, here's the problem, Mace, with this offense from a few years back and even now. Like, and we had this conversation on 360 yesterday. If the fourth or fifth wide receiver is on the field, the ball tends to find them immediately. And that to me, like, I haven't seen enough of Burks, but I would put him on the field as much as possible Sunday and force feed him the football. That may be against any line of coaching that they're giving and that other teams would give, but I need my thoroughbreds to be treated like they're headed to the Kentucky Derby and not, you know, the random racetrack here where you got one or two guys who are going to show up for one or two catches a game for 15 to 30 yards. Like, my hope is Robert Woods and Treylon Burks are the two leading receivers, along with the tight ends on Sunday, not the others who are going to be in there. Again, I think many of them have made this roster in the past because of their blocking ability, because they're physical, because they work and grind within this offense that requires that. And they're missing the punch of AJ Brown. It's not the number of catches. It's not the 1,000 yards. I mean, it is, but it's the big moments. He wasn't a true number one. He's not Davante Adams in the league. But he came up with some big moments for this team and this offense when they were trying to grind and come up with big plays, and he was the guy they went to. So that's where Burks has to step up. He was drafted to be that guy, and I hope they treat him that way because he, in all honesty, he should be treated that way. Mm-hmm. Not Nick Westbrook-Ikhine or Hollister or anyone else they're going to have out there. Those guys they have a key role, but the number one guy eventually needs to be Burks.
He's Jonathan Hutton of Outkick 360, 2-5 weekdays on 94.9 The Fan and presented by Blend Bar with Davidoff Cigars. Visit Blend Bar located in the heart of downtown Nashville. Blend Bar with Davidoff Cigars, luxury redefined. More with Hutton next. Chase Willie and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase Willie and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase McKay, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, continuing our conversation with Jonathan Hutton of Outkick 360. Weekdays from 2 to 5 on 94.9 The Fan, and he is presented by Blend Bar with Davidoff Cigars. Visit Blend Bar, located in the heart of downtown Nashville. Blend Bar with Davidoff Cigars, luxury redefined. Willie?
All right. Hutt, interesting series of questions for Mike Vrabel today, and one of them that caught my attention was the emphasis on illegal contact. And he's got a young secondary, right? You're going to see a lot of Roger McCreary. You might see Caleb Farley in there some. Christian Fulton is still a young player. You know, you don't have a lot of those crafty veterans. But I do think that's an interesting mix of the two. And also the philosophy of Mike Vrabel, the reaction, he kind of doesn't like the whole idea of a point of emphasis. But that's sort of life.
Yep, and, you know, he's on the competition committee now. So that's, you know, he's looking at it from – he doesn't want to see a high rate of flags on Sunday. Especially, I believe Jerome Bozier is the official as well, which is
unfortunately.
If you want to see a disorganized crew, it's coming your way at Nissan Stadium on Sunday. It was a point of emphasis, and it was reported through the national outlets that the NFL was going to get back to that because it was an all-time low last year on the number of flags they threw for illegal contact, past 5 yards. And I didn't notice it. I don't know if you guys did. I didn't notice it being an emphasis in the preseason. It's not like I thought that there were a high rate of penalties for illegal contact.
Yeah, I didn't either, and that is usually what they try to do, right? They overcall it in the preseason games. This definitely happens in hockey. We've seen it. It's ridiculous sometimes when they do a point of emphasis because they want to drive the habit into the players and not have it be a flag fest in the first week. So that is something to look for.
Yeah, and there was, and when I say there's a big drop, but I want to say it's around 60% last year compared to the year prior, down 60% less on the illegal contact past 5 yards on receivers. So I do think they'll rein that in some, but the point of emphasis that was made prior to the first preseason game, I didn't, and even in the joint practices when the officials were there, I didn't notice it being a huge issue, and I hope it stays that way. I hope they call it more. I mean, if there's an egregious foul, they need to throw a flag. But I hope that they're not throwing flags simply because the league wants to see more of them. I doubt the league wants to slow the games down. I mean, that may be why the flags were down a year ago. But if it's egregious, they need to throw it. And last year, I think there were instances where there was a clear hold where the ball doesn't come the receiver's way. And there may be a completion, and there's no flag on the opposite side of the field. I think that's more or less what they're getting at then. You know, that a few years back, it was leading with the crown of your helmet. And we did see a ton of penalties in the preseason for that. This was the opposite this year.
Good discussion this morning on our morning show when Paul joined the group about where does Harold Landry rank in terms of guys who are most important to the Titans' success. And Paul had him up there pretty high. Where would you rank him, Hutt?
I would put him up there high just based on the description of how they're going to replace him. I would compare it in a way to how they went about trying to replace Derrick Henry a year ago. It's by committee. Landry's very good at a number of elements of what makes a good pass rusher. I wouldn't call him great on any level, but he is a good combination of what the other guys bring in elements. And he's got a lean to him. He can bend around the edge. Other guys are just bull rushers and relentless effort. That's how I would describe Rashad Weaver, for instance. But Rashad Weaver can do that because he's playing 25 to 30 snaps a game at best and not 60. And that was the thing about Landry. Landry, he played three games his rookie year, and then the last 3 years, he's played about 90% of all of the snaps. He was available, and he never gassed out, and he gave you good looks on all three downs. So that's the hard part to replace is the amount of snaps he was giving them at a high rate. And I'm not sure they have one particular guy that can do that. But Weaver's very good. But the only guy I've ever seen that had that same relentless mentality that could do it the entire game is Kyle VandenBosch. And, you know, there's a big gap between those two guys. Maybe there's not. Maybe Weaver plays 60 snaps on Sunday and he's great. But I think they've got to figure out how to rotate guys in and maximize down and distance. And also take advantage of the fact that you can line that guy up next to Big Jeff or Autry, who had 9 sacks a year ago, and then Dupree on the opposite side needs to start the season the way he finished. But it's a big blow because it was that starting group up front was something that I think other teams would describe as the definition of the Titans roster. And for him to go down with a non-contact injury is very unfortunate, and they're going to need more than just Rashad Weaver and Adeni to give them really good reps for a player that was very good a year ago at doing just that.
Yeah, Hutt, I think the guy that's going to be affected the most by Harold Landry is Dupree. I just think he benefited from, you know, having someone on the other end that can take some of the pressure off of him. But now they paid him the money. Now he needs to play like they're paying him. Quick question here. I asked Adam Kaplan the same question. We had him on earlier. Because I don't think Ryan Tannehill by no means is Josh Allen. This is not what I'm saying, so people don't freak out. But they do.
Oh, God, yeah, where are you taking this?
They do have similar skill sets in the sense of, you know, and I understand that Ryan is older. I get that part. But I think if you put them both together at a younger age, both of them run the ball very effectively. Even though Ryan doesn't look to run anymore, he more so runs out of necessity. But I think they both display good accuracy. I think they both make good decisions for the most part. But my question to you is, if the Titans chose to say, hey, listen, you know, teams are going to, you know, stack the box because Derrick Henry, we have to open up this passing game. Can Ryan Tannehill do some of the things? I'm not saying everything. Again, he's not Josh Allen. Can he do some of those things that Josh Allen does? Because I look at both of them, and like I said, they have sort of the similar skill set in a sense. One's younger than the other, but I think they both can do some of the same things.
Yeah, you want to see him. You're saying like move him out of the pocket.
Exactly.
Throwing on the run.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I do think there's a way to maximize that. I would say the big difference between Tannehill and Allen would be like the downfield passing, you know, the third level. I think Tannehill can certainly take advantage of the intermediate routes. And then also, I mean, look, Allen's also playing with Diggs as well. So, I mean, there's a difference there that he benefits from. There are elements, though, where I'm with you. And he's a much better runner than I think people realize. From the national media perspective, knowing him and just watching him in Miami, you know, I didn't think of him as a running quarterback and mobile because I'm watching him take a ton of hits. And I think it would benefit them to get him on the move a bit more, even if it's for passing downs, simply to help out on the protection. I think the offensive line is going to be something that they're going to have to figure out over the course of the first month of the season, because it was a grind in the preseason, and they've been able to figure this out over the last couple of years with some plug and play players. But there will—I mean, the last time we saw LaJuan play a full season was 2017, full year. So there are going to be some pieces of that line that are going to have to mix and match throughout the season. And I think one way to protect Tannehill is to get him on the move and let him throw on the run where he's been pretty good.
He's Jonathan Hutton, Outkick 360, weekdays from 2 to 5 on 94.9 The Fan. Hutt, appreciate the time as always, and we'll do it again next week.
Sounds good, guys. I always look forward to this. I appreciate you.
Yep.
Jonathan Hutton, presented by Blend Bar with Davidoff Cigars. You can visit Blend Bar located in the heart of downtown Nashville. Blend Bar with Davidoff Cigars, luxury redefined. We'll get back into the points of emphasis conversation coming up next. It's Chase, Willie, and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Continue to vote in our poll question at 102.5, The Game on Twitter. Give us a follow, too, if you haven't done that. Will Titans running back Derrick Henry rush over under 1,350 yards? 80.8% say over. 19.2% saying under.
Over.
So go Believers. And vote in that.
Remember, that was set by DraftKings. That was not set by anybody here. So, I mean, Vegas would be sitting there going, geez, we thought that would be more like 50-50. I wonder if you did this nationally, how that would go compared to what we believe here. And Adam Kaplan was saying, look, I've been talking to Titans people. Internally, it sounds like they really feel good about how Derrick Henry is moving, how he looks in practice. You know, there's going to be optimism until you see it on the field. But I do think that counts for something, right? How he's moving in practice, how you feel about the whole thing. There's just a lot of confidence in him in general.
Yeah, I think you know, I don't think the organization, if they was concerned, they would, you know, outwardly say it. They might have phrased it a different way.
Yeah.
But I think they are excited about how Derrick Henry looks.
Sure.
And what they feel he's capable of doing again, because this team's success is dependent on two things. One, if the receiver the defense doesn't take a step back, and then two, how well does Derrick Henry run the ball? Because what he does affects everybody else. If he's running the ball on a clip where he's going to get over 1,500 yards or 1,700 yards, then I think everyone on the offense benefits from that. The offensive line benefits from it because teams just can't pin their ears back and rush the passer. They got to always, hey, they might run in this situation. Receivers benefit from that. Why? Because they got to stack another man in the box. Tight end benefits from it. So if Derrick Henry is back or close to what he was before he got injured, everyone on that offense benefits.
All right, so points of emphasis. This came up in Mike Vrabel's press conference a little bit, and you know, we've talked about hand fighting, and he's got a young secondary. You asked Jonathan Hutton about this, Willie. So what's kind of your thoughts here as they go into week one, knowing that the officials look for that sort of thing of you know, some trying to call pass interference on a young secondary?
I just wonder about that combination. You've got a rookie starting in Roger McCreary. I don't know if he's going to start, but he's going to be in there a lot. Caleb Farley's going to be in there, basically a rookie for the most part. Mm-hmm. Hasn't played a lot of football. You've got Elijah Molden, a second-year guy. You've got Christian Fulton, a third-year guy. Illegal contact, and this is the scenario I thought of, and Hutton brought it up. When you have a point of emphasis, and I don't care what sport you're talking about, in basketball, I went through this as a college player with hand-checking, mm-hmm. right? And in any number of years, and in pros or college, hand checking can be an emphasis, right? Hey, it's getting a little bit out of control. We're going to call it. In hockey, it could be the hooking and the holding, right? The last couple years, what has everybody been freaking out about? As soon as you put your hands and your stick up in the air and you get a guy on the hands, it's automatic. It's going to get called. So they're trying to change the habits of the players. So that tells me in the illegal contact, they're not going to let you get away with a whole lot. And so, Derek, for a young defensive back, you're going up against those kind of guys. What should we look for there? Is that a point of concern there?
Yeah, I've said it before. That's why, you know, my concerns, you know, with secondary is the lack of experience. And when you don't have the experience, you rely on pulling, holding. You're not necessarily, confident in your ability to, you know, move your hips, know plays, you know, read routes, know the design of packages that offenses are giving you, knowing your defense and trusting your defense. And especially when you're on the island by yourself, it's like, okay, I got to grab and hold. Caleb Farley, he's a little bit too handsy for me. And typically you see that with longer guys, cornerbacks, they use their hands a lot to grab and hold, especially at the line of scrimmage because that's their advantage. But once you get down the field, you can't rely on, you know, pulling and holding and expecting a ref not to call it. This is a point of emphasis now, and things like that is going to be called on Caleb Farley or McQuarrie or Molden, especially when you go up against experienced wide receivers. They're going to be looking to throw the flag if you grab one of these elite wide receivers. It's sort of like the elite quarterback. They look to throw a flag if you get anywhere close to an elite quarterback. It's the same way with these elite receivers. If you grab and they see it, they're throwing a flag. They're not keeping a flag in their pocket no more.
Yeah. Did you ever go through a rule change where you were frustrated with a quote point of emphasis where you're like, wait a minute, come on, you're just calling this for the sake of calling it? Or did you ever feel like you had to make an adjustment based on a point of emphasis like that?
I would say you had to get used when they sort of eliminated the blind side block. Mm-hmm. Some years when they really started to kind of hone in on it, you had as receivers and as, you know, running backs too, you had to kind of get used to that because your first thought is, the guy's coming toward me. This is a good opportunity for me to hit, you know, block him and spring the running back. Well, you couldn't do that. Or you got to be careful at blocking down when another guy's engaged. That was a big rule, especially offensive linemen had mm-hmm. to figure out. You know, no more can you hit a guy while he's being engaged. That went for receiver. You can't hit a guy in the box while he's being engaged. So guys had to get used to that. Just like guys like got to get used to now the emphasis of not holding receivers, because this is a passing league. People, you know, passing games and yardage put butts in the seats.
Yep, it keeps people interested. Yeah. They're going to – it's just like, you know, the most of these rules in every sport tend to favor entertainment mm-hmm. and offense. Hand checking, yeah. right? Mm-hmm. They want the best offensive players to be able to wheel and deal without getting mm-hmm. inhibited. It's always been a battle in sports. Same thing with the skilled players in hockey. They want less hooking, holding. They want the players to be free to do what they can do, make it tougher on the defense. We'll see how that plays into overall offensive stats mm-hmm. this year for football. How much they go into this? How many flags do we see across the league, not just in the Titans game?
I wonder if you're going to answer this question truthfully or not, so we'll see. But now that you're out of the league, and you've been out of the league for a good while.
It's 10 years almost. Well, it's over 10 years, I think.
Do you feel like that maybe offensive PI should be called a little bit more? Because there are times where I will see a receiver know that they're going to get away with it mm-hmm. because of the rules, you know, swing in their favor. And you see a push-off or you see a hold. Now, they call it sometimes, but I see some plays where I'm like, come on, that was pretty blatant, and they get away with it. So trying to be objective now, even though you played the position, I'm sure you had some tricks in your career. Do you think that it should be a little less one-sided than it is?
I think it we've seen this evolution of, you know, hey, listen, we need to start scoring more points. You know, we need to let these elite quarterbacks do what they do best. So you've seen sort of this morph into you can't touch anybody. You got to let him catch the ball, take two steps before you hit him. He has to see you before you hit him. And I'm thinking like, man, this ain't fair. This is not fair to the defense. None of what you're doing is fair to the defense. I understand the whole, you know, the not being able to hit with the crown of your helmet. I am all for that. Let these guys play longer or whatnot. But some of these rules, you look at them and you're like, man, seriously, let these young men just play football. And that's one of them where, you know, at times it's like, y'all didn't see what the receiver just did, you know. But here's the deal. The elite receivers – or the veteran receivers are so crafty at it. We may see it on television, but you got to understand these refs are running down a field and that pace of play is fast. Anyone, if you have an opportunity to watch a game on the sideline as opposed to watching it in the stands or on television, take it. Because you get a true appreciation of how fast the game is going. And these refs, you know, and I'm not trying to sit here and bash any, but you got a bunch of them that are not physically capable of, you know, running with these individuals or being in a spot where they can clearly see what's going on. That's just the way it is. You look at all the refs, man or woman, they're not physical. A lot of them are not physically, you know, they don't have the physical ability to be in the right spot at all times.
Coming up next, 46.6 million Americans plan to do this year. I will tell you exactly what that means coming up next, but the Nashville Fair returns to the Nashville Fairgrounds, and this Sunday, 102.5, 106.3, the game will be there from 2 to 4 p.m. Midway rides, agriculture, arts, livestock competitions, fair food, including Derek's favorite, hot chicken on a stick and deep-fried goo-goo clusters, and much more. You can buy tickets early and save at nashfair.fun. We will see you there. Don't miss Nashville's best NFL pregame show this Sunday live from Sonny's Patio and Pub Refuge, located at 6th Avenue North in Nashville. You can join Jared Stillman and former Titans wide receivers Chris Sanders and our own Derek Mason from 1 to 3 prior to the Titans taking on the New York Giants. The NFL pregame show is brought to you by TriStar Moving, Parman Tractor and Equipment, Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey, and Ounce of Hope. Looking forward to that as well as we ramp up our NFL coverage coming up this weekend. All right, so I read this earlier today, and you guys know that this is right up my alley, but David Purdom of ESPN has put this article out that a survey was conducted by the American Gaming Association. And according to the results of that survey, 46.6 million Americans plan to bet on the NFL this season, which would be up 3% from last year. It would be a record number of people betting on the NFL, which will kick off on Thursday. Currently, 31 states and the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico have launched legal betting markets, and a handful more are gaming up to get in the bookmaking business in the coming months. California is going to be a big state that it's going to vote in November on whether they can do that. But more than $50.4 billion has been bet on sports with the American sports books already in 2022, according to the AGA, which is unreal. We've seen what it's done here in the state of Tennessee. And I know that this is more up my alley than you guys, you especially, Willie. But I think this is huge, and the numbers are going to continue to go up.
What is the number of people watching? Is it increased people watching as well?
I think
betting?
It has. Now, here's where I think
that's what I'd like to know is like, is viewership up because gambling has been more legalized? And
I think
normalized?
Viewership may be up, and attendance could be going the other way because people are at sports bars or they're sitting at home where they can watch multiple games that they may have action on.
Well, that's definitely happening. The butts in seats.
But that was already. Yeah. I mean, that was already.
It was that was already a trend because the prices are just astronomical right now in regards to, you know, getting in the game and eating and parking and whatever else, merch, whatever else you know, can associate with going to a NFL game on a Sunday or a Monday or a Thursday. But then, you know, there's more opportunity for individuals to bet. You know, more states have made it legal. You know, and then as far as, you know, are more people watching? I don't think they can get a true number of the people ever watching, because you got to understand, and you guys know this, when you go to a sports bar, you know, like we will be at this weekend for the pregame show, there's probably 10 televisions, and there's probably, let's say, in a really good, you know, place, over 100, 200 people watching. They can't count all of those individuals. So I never trust the numbers when they say they're up or they're down, because they never give a true accurate assessment or true accurate number of who's actually watching. They can give an accurate number possibly of televisions, but they can't tell me a house has one television. Well, how many people are watching that television? You know?
Right. There's not a perfect way to do it. It's a general consensus. I do think, though, with the way that you can compute the bets, and it's right on your phone, the accounts – it's probably more accurate.
And you can make game time bets, like in-the-minute betting.
What I am concerned with, and so far the good thing is, if you don't want any part of it and you just want to watch the games, it's not infiltrating your ability to just to watch the game the way we always have, where betting is kind of in the backdrop. It's definitely more in the periphery than it used to be. You see teams, and the Predators are no exception. You know, they have that element to the broadcast now. It's there, but it doesn't crowd just what the overall broadcast is going to bring you. And that's, to me, that's good. That's the balance that you need to strike, because I get this. But my concern is, I asked the question when they first started this role of legalizing gambling, and Tennessee was going to be in there. I said, is this going to mean more people gamble? The answer is obvious now. With your phone, with the apps now, that and all
it's so
the
much
services,
easier, you don't have to go anywhere.
It's so easy. You don't have to call anybody. You don't have to go secretly do it behind the scenes. It's right there at all times. So you couple that with drinking, with legalized betting, and you got to wonder how many people are going to, you know, be able to do this in moderation as much as you want to. And so the more people that are betting, the more people that are going to have a problem betting. And you notice now, there are more commercials
they have
of people like the Mannings saying, hey, let's get, like, Archie and Peyton and those guys are out, and, you know, Eli's in there. Hey, look, here's an app. Mm-hmm. If you have a problem, here's something that we can help you with. It's going to set limits for you. And that is smart.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like, look, we let the horse out of the barn here. We're going. And so I do worry about there's some people that won't be able to handle this in moderation.
Well,
it's
by
so
law,
easy.
They're supposed to do that. I think there may have been a lawsuit a while back because someone said, well, they didn't, whether it's a help number or something else, it wasn't available. So now after all of these site, you know, commercials, they got to say that. But then, too, I don't think the number of people actually just watching the game, Chasing Willie, without any vested interest in it, I think it might be low, because not just betting, we're talking about fantasy football.
Mm-hmm.
So it may not even be your team that you like.
Yeah.
But you got somebody that plays for that team on your fantasy football
team. I'd love to see a stat, too, of if fantasy football participation has decreased since sports betting has gotten legal in a lot of markets. I know for me, I used to be in three or four leagues a year. I'm down to one. And like with that, like I'm excited about it, but it's like I only wanted to really do one or two, just because I know I'm gonna do daily fantasy or I'll have bets. I do a lot of prop bets with the NFL. I mean, that's how I made a lot of money, was I did a lot of touchdown parlays. But so I'm curious of kind of how people look at that.
Yeah. I don't think the NFL has really ever had a problem with people gambling. But now it's so
unless
easy,
you're a player,
it's so normalizing exactly. But I think you have other leagues now, and definitely hockey is one. I hear, you know, when we have Greg Wyshynski on there, he thinks it's a great way to grab those casual fans, right? It's just, look, find a way to get people involved. Find things for people to put a little bet on there. It's dangerous, right? You gotta know when to say when, all of those things that go into it, and avoid the combination of making bad decisions when you've been at the bar and there's a late night game on, right? All of those things. But that is what leagues have decided to go full throttle into, right? You're not, and for the most part, you're not worried about watching a game that's not on the level, right? That's another thing when you normalize gambling. But they've done a very good job of making sure that that stays above board. But the more people that are interested, if you can get somebody interested that wouldn't otherwise because maybe they put a little scratch on there, that's, the leagues are saying, bring it on.
Well, I'm a prime example of that for the NBA. Because I wasn't, you know, a huge NBA fan. I watched it casually, but then I started betting on it a little bit, and then I was watching it more. I got more versed in it, and so, I mean, I think that certainly helped. A couple of numbers that I found to be interesting. 13% of the people surveyed of NFL bettors say they will use an unlicensed bookmaker this season, a 2% year-over-year decrease. Betting with bookies is 50% higher in states without legalized sports betting, the survey found. That should be no surprise. But I think they're seeing that as it becomes legal in more and more places and you have the apps and you don't have to worry about a bookie or offshore or anything like that, that stuff is slowly starting to decrease. 89% of Americans who bet on sports the past year indicated that it is, quote, very or somewhat important to bet with a legal, regulated sports book.
So I would say that probably is your best move, you know, to go to a legal, a reputable and legal establishment, you know.
It also leads to other questions like, for example, in hockey, the injury information, right? How forthcoming is everybody? We know hockey is the least forthcoming with that. The NFL, we know for years, people like the Patriots, and everybody had their own tricks or has their own tricks to try to not give out to any more information than you have to, but to keep the betting above board, it's an important element. So that is a balance that all leagues have to do when they're in bed with the gambling sites.
Music City Bet says he likes my TD parlays. Give me the LeBron salute. Appreciate it, MCB. So I thought that was an interesting conversation for us to jump into, because you guys know how much I love the sports betting. But coming up next, can the Titans offense get enough explosive plays, and where do they come from? We'll get back into that. And also our poll question of the day, Chase Willie and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.